Welcome, everybody, committee members, audience. And what we're going to do is, pretty organized.
Sarah, you want to run the meeting?
Yeah. Do we have a I think today what I'm going to do then after Representative Gunter moves the minutes of the Tuesday, January 29th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections? If not, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. As we'll have the MSUSA students come up first, and then... Well, Grandma's wrong. Well, we'll just have the students come up. Come on up. We have a Jennifer Wheel. Is it? Well, am I pronouncing that right, Jennifer? Weil. If it had an itch on the end of it, I could pronounce it. But Cody Nelson and Aaron Olson from Bemidji, Southwest State, and Moorhead. Welcome to the committee. Come on up, all of you, and go ahead and tell us your thoughts and how we can make life better for you at the universities, and what you think of the governor's budget proposal, and anything else you want to talk about. Social upheaval, questioning authority, I'm right there with you on all of this. So, welcome. And identify yourself for the team.
Oh, I'm Jennifer Weil.
Aaron Olson.
Cody Nelson.
I just want to thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to come and kind of give us some perspective. So, my name is Jennifer Weil, and I serve as the Vice Chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association, and I'm also a student at Minnesota State University Moorhead. Students are very concerned about the possibility of higher education to be cut during the next biennium, especially since hearing the governor's proposal to cut the Minnesota State College and University system more than 10%. Even the unallotment that recently occurred will take a toll on our campuses. Further budget cuts could seriously impact their ability to offer high-quality academics and student services necessary to prepare tomorrow's educated citizens and workforce. As many of you recall, the 2003 legislative session brought significant cuts to the Minnesota system. These cuts were made up for by mostly higher increases in tuition, approximately 15% per year. Of the $191 million cuts to the system over these 2 years, more than $173 million in addition to tuition had to make up for it. Beyond that, campuses continue to evaluate cost savings and reallocations to balance their budget. Students are still paying the price today for the cuts that were made in 2003. Student debt has become a problem for nearly every student in our system. Borrowing, which was once the last resort for college costs, has now become the norm. Today, students are graduating with tens of thousands of dollars in debt. We face an economy today that has an oversaturated housing market and a need for people with discretionary income to fill that. Today, students simply cannot fill that role. And most of them will be paying fast student loans for many years to come. It is not uncommon for students to have payments of $400 per month, as they may be paying each month for the next 20 years or more. I estimate that I have borrowed approximately $40,000 by the time I graduated. It has become nearly impossible for students to graduate without debt, especially if their parents are unable to help them pay for it. And even with work, even by working and attending school. This is a sharp contrast to the experience of previous generations. A student starting school during the fall of 1971 paid only $379 to attend a state university. In 1971, the minimum wage was $1.60 per hour. This means a student could work 237 hours per year to pay for tuition. That's an average of about 4 hours per week. Contrast to the fact that students starting today during the fall semester of 2008 face an average cost of $6,083 in tuition and fees at the state university. Minimum wage is currently $6.55 per hour. The students who began college this fall have to work up to 929 hours per year to pay for their tuition. That's about 18 hours per week. Avenue for paying for rent, food, books, and props, even a family, it's easy to see how the cost of public higher education has become too much to handle. we believe that there is a commitment by the Michigan Board of Trustees, as well as the legislators and the governor, to ensure that the college is affordable by limiting tuition increases. We appreciate the recognition that the budget cannot be balanced on the backs of students. However, it is also important to recognize that no matter how budgets are balanced, students will be hurt by the cuts to state funding. As these budgets are balanced, cuts would have to be made in academic and student services, as well as faculty and staff. These would all impact students' ability to attain a high-quality college education. Allow me to give a few examples of the cuts that could be made and how they'll impact students. If the system is cut significantly, campuses should make cuts to student services such as tutoring and other programs intended to help students succeed in higher education. With the changes in demographics of the state, our system is working more and more to reach out to underserved and underrepresented populations. And many student services are incredibly valuable in ensuring retention and success of these students. Class sections could be eliminated, which means that students would not be able to get into classes they need in a timely fashion. This would likely extend graduation dates for these students, which would end up costing them more in tuition dollars. Campuses may have to cut faculty and staff positions, which would not only eliminate the number of class sections offered, but also the availability of student services, and also being able to get proper advising. Advising is key to successful completion of a degree, and without it, there is very often confusion about graduation requirements and transfer, which can lead to extended graduation time and also increase in tuition costs. Our system not only provides educated workers and citizens, it also brings large contributions to the state economy each year. In 2005, the total statewide economic impact of the Minnesota State College and Universities was approximately $3.5 billion. Our students understand that these difficult economic times, and that debt crisis needs to be made. However, continuing a trend of decline investment in public higher education will not help Minnesota economy to rebound. We believe that our colleges and universities can play a key role in rebuilding the economy, and an investment today can ensure a better future for the state of Minnesota and its citizens. Inflationary funding for the Minnesota system is a top priority for state university students. A commitment by the state to fund inflation would help to ensure that our campuses are able to continue to offer high-quality academic programs and the student services necessary for success in higher education. MCSA supports the Minnesota Board of Trustees' annual budget request for $71.7 million to help fund inflationary costs on the campuses. This request is the lowest request in the system's history, and it reflects recognition of the economic outlook while still acknowledging the budget realities that our campuses are facing. More than 80% of the state college and university students live and work in the state after graduation. They are tomorrow's nurses, teachers, police officers. They are tomorrow's educated citizens and taxpayers. Just as it is a difficult economic time for the state government, it's also a difficult economic time for state citizens. Loss of employment for students and their families, and loss in the stock market may mean that savings that were intended for college education is no longer available. Public higher education can play a key role in rebuilding our economy, and affordability and access are necessary components in ensuring a better future for Minnesota and its citizens. I have two young children at home, and I am going to school to become educated, to find a job, and to ensure a good future for them. I hope you will view public higher education as we do, as investments that can improve Minnesota economy and investments in the future of the state. In a state where education has been valued, our campuses were intended to be the access point for public higher education in the state of Minnesota. Now at a time of changing demographics, a time where students are facing crushing debt loads, a time where education can be a place for those who have lost their jobs and have a second chance, a time of change and hope for better days ahead, what could be more fundamental than investment in the future by ensuring higher quality, accessibility, and affordability in public higher education. And today with me, we have two additional students that are going to be talking about their experiences, telling a little bit more about their own stories about college and how these budgetary cuts could be affecting campuses.
Well, first, Jennifer, thank you. And does the committee have any questions of Ms. Weil?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. Jennifer, could you tell me what kind of role students have played at your university to work with administrators regarding what will be potential cuts in your campus locally?
I know that on my campus, our president has actually been to many student senate meetings to keep them very updated as far as the process goes. There's also like our university planning and budget committee where we have three student representatives, one including our student body president who sits on that, where we have weekly meetings and there are discussions about where we are in our budgeting process. I know that they're kind of coming up with many different scenarios right now. Obviously, it's a little difficult for them to.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And have you had any layoffs at your college that you're aware of as far as faculty or staff?
Ms. Wyatt.
I'm not clear as far as the staff layoffs. I know that obviously there are some vacancies to positions that have been remained vacant because of the tough budgetary time. But I know that obviously those things are a consideration when looking at these drastic budgetary cuts.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Weil. This is a genuinely honest question, so just take it. I really am looking for your opinion on this. You're not only asking us not to consider the 10% cut that the governor proposes, but to consider an inflationary increase for the Minscu budget. In light of what you know about our state's deficit, what is your proposal for how we might fund that increase? And I really want to know what you think about how we could appropriately fund that increase.
This looks like your legislator for a day or governor. How do you raise the money that you want us to? Incidentally, you brought up the $71 million inflationary request by Minscu. Does anybody on this committee remember getting any proposal by Minscu? Maybe the two lobbyists. For Minsky, where's Representative Ullman? I'll pick on the Republican lobbyist today instead of the Democratic one. Is Minsky, the Board of Trustees, going to be making a request for an inflationary increase? On the original budget request? Or on the governor's proposed budget?
I think we have.
Pardon me?
Haven't we had that meeting on the governor's request?
Not yet. We're going to hear from Ms. Seagard, I believe, on Thursday, aren't we? And she'll be talking about the governor's proposal. But to date, I don't think any of the committee, or certainly the chairman, I don't know if Representative Anderson or anybody has gotten any requests on the Board of Trustees or anybody else on the committee requesting an increase of $71 million. So you're ahead of the board. Thank you. But anyhow, back to you, Governor. What would you do, Governor Weil, for either cutting or raising revenue?
Well, I'm curious. Obviously, I'm not qualified to be able to adequately answer any kind of question like that.
That's the answer I wanted to hear from the current governor. But
Mr. Chair, you set the trap in advance.
No. But go ahead. So that's your answer?
Well, I guess, from a perspective, really, I think for us, like, we take a look at the intention of the legislature to fund state public higher education at 2/3 and have switched and changed the 1/3. And that was the ratio in 2002, but as it stands right now, we're about 50-50. If these cuts continue to happen, students will be paying more than the state will be paying to fund education. And I mean, from a student's perspective, it's basically, for me, it's like asking those who have the least to give us the task. But, it's really difficult these times, not only because it's difficult for students to, with this economic time, it's hard for them to be able to find loans, to be able to even, to pay for their higher education, but with working multiple jobs or trying to support, or something like trying to support a family, it's really difficult to like to these budgetary times.
And you're anticipating, I didn't get your testimony. Are you a senior? Or are you a?
I am.
And so, do you expect to graduate in 4 years, or it's going to take you longer because you're a mom and Everything else?
Yeah, it took me 5 years. I just transferred.
And your $40,000 you think in debt? And do you work too besides being a mother?
Yeah, sure. You know, the entire time I've been in school, I've worked part time.
And so, like, how many hours do you have to work a week?
Well, as it stands right now, I am working for these locations, but it depends on the week. But in years past, it's been 10, 12 hours or so. As much as I possibly can fit in, obviously having two smaller and bunch of four, my time is limited, and it's been as much time as possible. So.
Any other questions of Ms. Warren? I represent them. Gotcha. Oh, Representative Norn is first. Excuse me, Representative Norn.
Part of what I was going to ask has already been asked, Mr. Chair. That I first was interested in where you're from, Jennifer. Where's your home?
Ms. Wyle.
Representative, my hometown is West Fargo.
Okay.
So it's just
and my follow-up, Mr. Chair, I've got a granddaughter looking for a college. I'm just wondering why you selected Morehead State, Morehead University.
I selected that institution mostly partially because it was close to my home, because I was starting a small family and it's very important to be close to, you know, grandparents and the like, but also because initially I was going into education and they have a very good educational program. Also, it is a very top affordable institution. Either the cheapest or the second most reasonable institution in the system for institutions. So obviously with the increasing costs, it was quite a bit more reasonable than
what I thought. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Gotcha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor Rocavina,
yes.
I know you are in favor of a surtax, and I talked to your senator, the tax committee.
My senator is Senator Thomasone.
Okay. Yeah. Your neighboring senator.
Your neighboring senator.
He said that in order to have a surtax cover what we need, it's going to have to be a 40% surtax. And in light of what Ms. Wyle said about her parents losing their retirement income and the money they had set aside in the stock market, what do you recommend now for us to balance our budget? Have you got a recommendation ready?
Representative Gunther, I have never said, I have just said all along here since we came into session that anybody that thinks we can balance this without raising some revenue is nuts. But aside from that, I have never denied that there's going to have to be cuts to compromise. But to tell you the truth, I would rather than destroy this state, which I think a $5 billion cut would do, I'd sit here till Christmas to reach a compromise, because the governor's got to understand that he helped create this mess, and now he's got to help solve it. He was told in 2002, if you want to get into a public debate, in 2001 by Roger Moe, when we went into a special session, that they could never pay for the 2001 tax bill. And I didn't say that. Arne Carlson said it just as recently as last year. So, you know, I think I saw fear in the governor's eyes at his state of the state, because I think this monster's even got out of, as much as he wants to starve the beast and cut government, I think this monster's even got out of control as far as he's concerned. There's no way to get out of this session without raising some revenue. So do you have to raise 40%? No. That would be totally unreasonable in today's economy. But me personally, I think the fairest way and the most transparent way, since everybody in Washington and even leadership around here is talking about transparency, is to tax the fairest way, which is based on income and those that make it, because there are people that make income even when there's a huge recession going on. There are people that make money, you know. So that's the way I would do it, but I understand that probably at least half of that $5 billion got to be done in cuts. But, you know, this is a book I saved from when I was a freshman, just like Representative Oldham. You know?
Those are tablets.
I'm sorry. Well, and actually, it's a proposal by both Minskew, then, and the Land-Grant College, which I think you were around when they granted the Land-Grant College in 1848, Representative Haas. But, you know, look at the detail we used to get in the budget, members. This is when the legislature actually told these people, you're going to tell us where you spend money. And since this is the year that we're going to have to make some serious cuts around here and harm people, I'm going to go back to something like this because, you know, when the board of when Saudi Ledoux and the boxing board has the same number of pages in the budget book as Minfield and the University of Minnesota, I'm the world's worst capitalist, but even I can realize something sure as hell wrong here. So we're going to go back to this somehow. And I'm going to know where every penny comes from and where every penny goes, and not only our pennies, but other people's pennies. And so, well, that was a long answer to your short question. Don't get me riled up this early in the session. My blood pressure is already going up. But go ahead, Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry you kids have to watch this.
This is the first time
I got two rambunctious kids to take care of, too.
This is the first time I get to see this periodical right here. And I'm sure it's going to be considered a periodical.
But
I'm
members,
looking forward to having
members.
Many changes to this book.
Look at this. I remember we used to get from our two higher education institutions.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. And Representative Poppy. And now look what we get. Here is both the university.
Are you requesting that we receive the same detail from Minsky and
I am,
university
here's
at
what
this
we get
point?
Today. What's happened in 20 years? Something's wrong here. So yes, I have. I told them both. Exactly. Started the letter out to Brunick and Chancellor McCormick saying, as the self-proclaimed worst capitalist at the legislature, I still realize something's wrong when the Board of Cosmetology and Barbers has a more detailed and sicker budget than you guys.
Mr. Chair, I just would request that we each receive that, if that's what it's not just the chair, but
the whole committee.
Thank you, and that we will be able to go through the detailed budget and
I
be able to.
I want to know what
thank you.
I want to know what Albert can get.
I would appreciate that, and I support you wholeheartedly on that. Thank you.
And Roger,
Mr.
And
Chair,
Fergus Falls and everywhere else, and Representative Anderson, please don't.
Mr. Chair,
don't ask me too hard. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to go ask you at all. In fact, I agree with you that we need to have those budget books. But I'm going to go off topic from what you guys were discussing, if that's all right. I've got a question for the testifier. Is that all right?
For Ms. Weil? Okay, that's exactly why we're here.
This is also for all three of you. If you could tell me again what colleges you go to, and then if you could tell me, if you know off the top of your head, how much do you pay in student service fees?
Ms. Weil, you want to go first?
Near Moorhead, correct?
I do. I go to MSU on Moorhead. And, I apologize. All I have is the tuition teaching fund, but I know that the fees, how they work on all the different institutions vary, depending on, I know for the way that our institution is set up, and for MSU and Moorhead, we have a lot of first credit fees that charge the entire fee on first credit, and what we are looking in the process of revising some of that so that over the 12 credits, we kind of those include our health and wellness fee, which any student regardless of the number of credits that they are taking are able to access the full service. But I think it really does vary.
Mr. Nelson or Mr. Olson, do you know off the top of your head?
I was going through my I'm Aaron Olson. I go to Southwest Minnesota State. I was going through and looking at all the money that I saved in my university, and usually every semester you get a fairly detailed list of the student fees, and those vary from semester to semester. I know that as member of the Student Senate, we passed certain things that go towards to raise student fees in some areas, like the technology fee or the health services fee, and those are used to provide the students with services. I know that when I started in the fall of 2004, my fees were a little less than $500. This semester, it's going to be closer to $1,000. So the fees have gone up considerably in the last 5 years, and it's not all because of, you know, student senate or administration increases. It's because these organizations that are funded by student fees recognize that they need more money, that they need increased funding in order to provide the same kind of services that they provide to students.
And Mr. Nelson, do you know off the top of your head?
Yes, the district did it. My name is Cody Nelson, come from Bemidji State University. The numbers in front of me, $577 would be the standard load. And what else?
That semester or?
It's an annual.
Okay.
And I just want to be honest, that's very high. And the reason why that's high is I was president of student government for 2 years, and I was very supportive with many of our students as we looked around realizing we had to increase these fees because the students approaching our university come from every background, and they need every support service that we can give them. And they had to come off our backs.
Okay. Representative Anderson, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, as a follow-up, and I realize that you guys are busy with your schedules. I know what it was like to be a college student and managing everything else that you've got going on in your life. But if I could have Ms. Weil and, is it Mr. Olson? If you could maybe send me an email with detailing what your...
What we'll
are.
Do...
Yeah. It'd be nice to get...
Ms. Anderson, what we'll do is we'll have the officers of MSUSA or even the Minsky system tell us. We'll break it on by campus for you, all 38 or whatever.
That would be wonderful.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I was just follow up on Representative Poppy's request that you don't just bring that to the committee hearing, but that we each get one at our office so we can spend all these wonderful evenings going over it line by line.
We planned on doing that.
Thank you.
And we're going to even delve into the other agencies that also. And you, I know, are looking at some of those agencies as far as what their programs actually do and why they should be funded or whether they should be funded anymore at all. Mr. Let's see, we'll take Cody since I recognize you. How's Coach Sertich doing up there, Cody?
We're great.
Good? Is he? Okay, good. Welcome to the committee and go ahead and do your spiel.
All right, well, good afternoon. Once again, my name is Cody Nelson. I come from Crookston, Minnesota, and I actually graduated from Bemidji State University last spring. And I come here just to share you my story. So my major was business management, changed my degree 5 times, but I'm happily graduated now. I'm here today because I'm worried about what a lack of investment in public higher education, as well as the governor's proposed budget cuts, could mean for my campus, as well as what it could mean for future students. See, I'm one of the lucky students. I come to you debt-free. The reason why I come to you debt-free was because my dad started investing for me 12 years before I was born. If you add up the numbers, that's 30 years that he invested for my education. He challenged me to do the same. I'm 23 years old, and right now I'm investing for my students, my future child's education, if that ever happens. And that concerns me. The double-digit percentage tuition increases that we faced while I was in school meant that all of the money that was saved in my college fund is now spent. I'm completely empty. Although I myself was fortunate not to have to borrow student loans, I've certainly seen the effect of that on many of my friends on campus. A number of them have wanted to do a year of service, as President Obama talks about, and such as joining the Peace Corps or the AmeriCorps. But because of our current debt load, those friends are now changing their minds. I have 2 friends who are in Minneapolis right now on the corporate path because they can't pay off their student debt. Also, my best friend, he is about to move into a 1-bedroom apartment with 3 people living in it because he cannot afford his student debt loans that are now up in about a month. And he doesn't know how he's going to make it. I'm concerned that the rising tuition costs will change the accessibility of the college and university experience. That experience has made a lasting impact on my life and has opened many doors for me. I worry that in the future, only the privileged will receive those same opportunities. Cuts to campus budgets can also make a real impact on students, as Jennifer talked about earlier. I was a student body president for 2 years, and I saw firsthand the budget adjustments that have been made to balance the budget while trying to serve the students in the best way possible. However, a need to make more budget cuts will likely significantly impact the student experience because internal reallocations are already being made every year, and cuts will likely go very deep into academics, student services, and the campus experience at this time. I'm currently working for a youth leadership and service nonprofit called Students Today Leaders Forever, where we work to reveal leadership through service relationships and actions on a daily basis. And I work with high school students. And these high school students have come up to me and they are concerned about the cost of college. They're concerned about their future. because they want to have the same opportunity that I had. However, they're also worried, too, about the quality that they're going to receive. They even worry that our public colleges and universities, which are supposed to be the most financially accessible schools in the state, will cause them to mortgage their future with a high student debt load. And I also hear some of them talk about attending college outside of the state of Minnesota because they are concerned that more and more budget cuts and a lack of investment in our public higher education will mean that the academic quality and student services that they are looking for are just not going to be there. Losing students to other states, especially given that so many students who attend our school stay in Minnesota to live, work, and play, will certainly not only help Minnesota to be competitive in a knowledge-based economy, but also going to help us grow for the future. We need to invest now to ensure that Minnesota can continue to educate its citizens at a high-quality, accessible, and affordable college and university system, because our future depends on it. Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, any questions of Mr. Nelson?
Representative Oberman.
Incidentally, before you start, you got the, next to Bud Nornes, you have the nicest radio voice I've heard around here in a long time.
Well, thank you, Chair.
I just want you to know that. You should have taken up radio only, Representative Nornes. Representative Oberman.
Thank you, Chair.
I got that.
It's the issue of five major changes is one that intrigues me, because one of the things that's important to me and that I've heard a lot is how difficult it is to get through college in 4 years. Could you tell me, and maybe if anyone else wants to weigh in, I'd love to hear it too, but what the message was that you got when you first got to college about how to get through college in 4 years, and what the impact was on changing majors and how we can get kids through in 4 years so we're not having 5 and 6 years of tuition costs added onto those student loans.
I'm sure it could be a representative. What was shared with me was to explore, was to take your 2 years of liberal education and challenge yourself and try everything and find where your passion is. And then from there, I was in the honors program. I was able to move around. I was able to try things. But because of the robust liberal education at Bemidji State, I was able to have credits account for my major. So I finally was able to sit down, pinpoint, and get out in 4 years. And that was also due to my advisor, who coached me through the whole process. And he's still a good friend that I emailed to today and still call. And so that made a lasting impact on me and got me out.
If I can ask that too, like when looking at these difficult budgetary times, when looking at possible staff layoffs, I know that like we rely heavily on our full-time staff to provide that advising for our students. And I feel that is an incredibly important thing to student success, because there's so many things that are unknown to students as they're coming in, and the only way that they'll be able to travel down a certain path that's right for them, or to be able to take the classes when they are offered, or instead of just thinking that they're going to be offered every single semester, the only way to be able to do that and be successful is to have a good advisor. And for some of our institutions, we're looking at 100, 200 students per faculty, and it's impossible for them to be able to spend the quality time that is necessary to provide them with really good advising. And I mean, there's always circumstances where there's a few students who maybe need a little extra help, whether like they're transfer students or NASA students that maybe need a little extra guidance. And what ends up happening is those students then see that time, but then it also cuts into time that other students need in order to get that same level of help and support. So in our group, I think assist students in getting out in an adequate amount of time and not adding 2 years that they have to take in responsibility, adding 2 years and the person debt load that they're going to have to take on. Like advising, I think, is definitely very important.
Mr. Olson, why don't we just have you start, and then you can work that answer in for Representative Oberman into your
absolutely.
Representative Demmer, can you wait?
Before Bemidji.
Okay, go ahead. Is that okay, Representative Mueller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And, backing up here. Go ahead.
Again, I myself, class of 73, Bemidji State. Go Beavers, okay? Set aside the budget and the finance problems we have set before us here. Any policy changes that you can see at Bemidji that you would like to see changes? Anything on the policies?
Chair Gravina, Representative, good question. Policy changes. Well, I'm the alumni, so looking back on my experience, I would just like to encourage a policy of the holistic student, of looking after the student from every background, where they come and us being able to support them and us being able to graduate them with a solid education. And so what does that mean? That means that we look at our liberal education, we really focus on it, and we really want to make an impact on the student with student services as well. And once again, I love Bemidji. I think Bemidji changed my life. And it was very affordable, but I'm concerned about the future. And Bemidji, to me, really does a holistic look on the student and the impact that it can make by taking the big picture.
Thank you. Yeah. Mr. Olson, welcome.
Okay, thank you. My name is Aaron Olson. I'm a student at Southwest Minnesota State University, and I will be graduating this spring with a double major in history and political science. And I was also a student athlete. I played baseball for 4 years. I lettered 3 years at Southwest. After college, I hope to obtain a law degree, yeah. And I hope this degree will open doors for me in many areas and give me the skills I need to succeed in public service. The rising cost of higher education is a concern for our entire society. If American citizens are going to compete in the global market, they are going to need the skills to do so. With the competing nations of the world investing heavily in education, we really are in danger of falling behind. College should not only be accessible, it should also be affordable. The cost of college may be a cinch for some, but it is becoming exceedingly rare that a student can pay their own way. Scholarships have dwindled and loans must take up the slack because few families have the funds to pay for the rising cost. I had a meager amount of savings when I went to college that I made throughout my high school career, and the commitment of Division II athletics places a considerable time constraint on student athletes and makes it difficult to even work full-time or even part-time. However, since I've been a student at SMSU, I have been employed during regular breaks and a few of the fall semesters outside of the baseball season. Recently, I've also been able to work a few hours for the company that I did. I worked for during the summer, which has provided a little bit of pocket change, which is nice. And I also just received an RA position, so that is paying for my room and board this semester, which is a big help. The fluctuating cost of college and the unforeseen expenses that occur have placed me in financial difficulty several times. I began college in the fall of 2004, and that was when state funding was cut for the Minsky system by $191 million over 2 years. And I looked at the college website, Southwest website, when I first started looking at colleges, and I determined that it would cost about $40,000 for 4 years of an education. Just kind of a ballpark, assuming that the cost of tuition would continue to rise at a fairly predictable rate. But now I'm looking at paying about $60,000 for my undergraduate degree. In addition, I've also had to pay for semester. At the semester end, I had an outstanding balance, and in order to register for next semester, you have to pay off your entire semester bill, and that has kind of jumped up and bit me several times. I didn't have enough money, and the first time I did that, I just charged it to my credit card, which in retrospect was incredibly stupid. The other two times, I was fortunate enough to rely on my two grandmothers to provide me with a little emergency loan, so that was very nice of them.
You want to charge it on their credit card?
They have a lot more wealth built up over the years. They've been able to work for 40, 50 years. But when I do graduate, I will have about $15,000 in federal student loans, $12,000 in private student loans, and again, owe my grandmother about $6,000. So all totaled, it's about $33,000 that I'm in debt for my college education. My parents are not wealthy. They do not have the income or the savings to pay for my education. This is not because they do not work hard. It is not because they do not save and sacrifice for me. But it's because they've spent years battling bad credit, going through a divorce, and also raising three kids. So I just need to point that out because they work very hard, and they definitely give me as much as they possibly can, but they just do not have the income, they don't have the savings to pay for my education.
Aaron, did you get any state grants, work study, anything? You must have gotten state grants qualified, didn't you?
I was not eligible. My parents made enough money that I was not eligible to get work study grants, and I did qualify for unsubsidized staff and loans, which helps pay for it. But when you send away the FAFSA, then the government usually sends you a letter saying you qualify for this much in unsubsidized loans and
every semester for me is varied wildly. So I have no idea until I get that letter how much I need to take out or whether or not I have to take out a loan. So it's kind of hit or miss. This year, I received $3,700 a semester from unsubsidized loans, and that was, I think, twice as much as I've ever received, and I was completely shocked that I didn't actually have to take out a student loan to go to college my fifth year, so that was a very, very pleasant surprise. I know students who do not work but take out loans every year. I know students who work full-time and combined with financial aid barely have any debt at all. I also know a lucky few who do not worry about the cost of college at all because their parents pay all of their money, I mean all their bills. However, most students that I talk to have to work and take out loans to pay for college. Many of them do not have the amount of debt that I do, but I am afraid that younger students will. The people who come after me, who are, you know, underclassmen now, are probably going to have a lot more debt than I will ever have. So, I'm concerned for the long-term health of the higher education system and the overall education of our society. In the short term, I'm afraid that younger students will have a more difficult time obtaining an undergraduate education. I voted in this November election, as did many of my fellow students, and I voted for the candidates I thought would make education a priority. I hope that campaign promises for better Minnesota will come to fruition, and that investment in higher education will be seen as an integral part of making that happen. Thank you for your time, and I'll
answer questions any questions. Questions to Mr. Olson. Representative
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask a question that would go to any of the students.
Go ahead.
If that's all right. I'd be interested in any or all of your comments on the governor's proposal to have Minsku deliver 25% of their course offerings online.
We understand that like online courses are very important, definitely when it comes to students who are not in the vicinity of an institution where they are able to be there physically. It opens up a lot of opportunities for those students. I guess our concern as students is that it maintains the same academic quality that a student would receive if they were to be in the class. And in order to be able to administer that many online courses, it would require a significant investment. And as the policies stand right now, if there was not any investment through the state, then the students would end up picking up that tab.
Do either of you guys have anything to answer that? We're running out of time.
Yeah, I'll be really quick. I had to take online classes while living on campus because of cuts they moved from class offerings, so I experienced that while living on campus. And I'll tell you that I wasn't very satisfied in the sense. I wish I could have been in class because I made friends, I made a relationship with my professor. Everything that class is, to me, wasn't because it was online at a coffee shop down the street. And so I do disagree strongly with what he said.
But it is also very vital for those individuals who are unable to be able to be there and also to not get some students. But if given the opportunity, I don't think we want our students to feel forced to take online courses because of a certain amount, percentage requirement by those institutions, especially for those students who have that ability to be there in class and have those experiences. Because it's very different two learning styles. Some students just learn better being in that classroom setting. And so to limit them by a percentage would, I think, be to their detriment.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Representative Downey, did you want to ask a question of these three? Go ahead. I certainly wouldn't want to censor anyone from Edina for that. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a pretty simple question. The three of you, do any of you regret the decision that you've made? Do any of you feel like the investment that you made was not worth it?
I feel that the investment that I made was necessary for me. I have two small children, and if I want to better our circumstance for my family, I feel like the investment is necessary. Education is necessary. I do definitely regret the amount of money that I had to invest, because looking forward,
I know that I'm not going to be able to purchase a home for my family and have a yard for my kids to play in very soon. Like, it's gonna require a lot of years after my initial years of investment to be able to pay for the education for the 4 or 5 years that of the education that I'm receiving. So, education-wise, I feel that it's always a good investment, definitely, but cost-wise, it's nothing.
President Donnelly, we heard the same story a couple of years ago for the members that sat on the committee of terrible examples of debt that these students are incurring. And that's sad for you to say that your kids, you're worried about your kids having a yard to play in. In our day, we had the whole block to play in. We didn't have to worry about anything. But you moved to the range, and there's a lot of places where you can have a yard to play in. Okay, thank you very much for coming. And we're going to have the two-year college students come up. Jacob, bringing up your students, and then after that, we'll have the faculty members come up together, maybe from IFO and Mr. Mulcahy, too. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Littler, and your members, and identify yourself for the tape. As you speak one at a time, Jacob, are you going first?
Yes,
welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Rukavina, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jacob Littler, and I'm the president of the Minnesota State College Student Association. With me today is Terry Bowser, the vice president of the MSCSA, Melody Schultz and Travis Johnson, who are both students at Lake Superior College in Duluth, and Catherine Fennewald, a student at Inver Hills Community College in Inver Grove Heights. It's our hope today that we will be able to provide you all with a snapshot of the Minsky system, how past budget deficits have affected students and higher education in Minnesota, as well as a clear picture of the challenges facing students at our community and technical colleges and how that relates to the challenges facing the state as a whole. To begin, allow me to lay out some facts about our system. The Minsky system has 54 campuses in 47 communities across the state, and these institutions are often the driving forces behind local and regional economies. And it is our colleges that will provide the well-trained and skilled workforce that will ensure the economic viability of the state into the future. Without a strong Minsky system, it will be impossible for the state to meet its future workforce needs or to provide the retraining and educational opportunities many Minnesotans will count on to get them back into employment that will allow them to flourish and boost the state's economy. As many of you may be aware, the institutions that make up the Minsky system train a significant number of the students that will fill the occupations that we as a state most desperately need. Approximately 80% of Minsky students stay in Minnesota to work following graduation. Maintaining a strong public investment in this system will guarantee that we can continue to fill some of the state's most needed professions. More specifically, Minsky institutions educate more than half of the state's new teaching graduates, 82% of the state's new nursing graduates, 89% of law enforcement officers, 89% of graduates in the construction trades, 92% of new mechanics graduates, 41% of the state's new business graduates, and 9,000 firefighters and emergency first responders every year. As I'm sure you are all aware, past budget deficits have hit public higher education hard, with much of the financial responsibility for making up these large budget cuts falling onto students in the form of tuition increases which far outpace the rate of inflation. In 2003, when the state faced a roughly $4.3 billion deficit, the Minsky-based budget was reduced by $191 million. In order to make up that difference, colleges across the system implemented double-digit tuition increases that are still having negative consequences for students today. In total, $173.6 million of the $191 million cut, or just over 90% of the total budget cut, was paid by students through increased tuition. In recent years, students have seen some relief from the high tuition increases of the past. Thanks to the work of the legislature and the Minsky Board of Trustees, tuition increases have been minimized in recent years. But community and technical college students in Minnesota still pay the second highest tuition and fee rates in the nation. We applaud the efforts of the legislature and of the Minsky system, and we ask that all decision makers continue to keep the needs of students at the forefront of their minds as we have the difficult conversations necessary in a tough budget climate such as this. The state of Minnesota faces a historic budget deficit that will require difficult budget decisions, as well as the need to look for new and innovative ways to deliver the services and quality higher education that Minnesotans have come to expect. Students understand that we must be a part of the overall budget solution. However, we continue to believe that reductions to higher education must be minimized in order to ensure that we do not further erode the ability of Minnesotans to access the educational opportunities that they, as well as the state as a whole, will need. Over the past few years, the Minsky system has worked hard to be good stewards of the taxpayer dollars entrusted to them. Not only has the system made every effort to limit tuition increases, but they've looked for ways to make the system and its institutions run more efficiently. As students, we appreciate these efforts, and we look forward to working with the board and the Office of the Chancellor to continue this trend. But we fear that if the system faces another dramatic reduction to its base, the inevitable reductions in services or tuition increases will lead us down a road that will not only have negative effects on students, but on the state's economic recovery. And at this time, I would like to invite each of our students who are here with us today to share their stories with you.
Any questions before we go on? Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Melody Schultz, and I'm a full-time student at Lake Superior College in Duluth. I am pursuing an AA and also an AAS in accounting. I'm married to Matt Schultz, who is also a full-time student at Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College in Spokane. He is going for law enforcement, hoping to finish with his post-certification, an AS in law enforcement, and possibly an AA. We are the parents of two teenage children. Our son, Jonathan, is a junior in high school and an honors online PSEO student through Lake Superior College, working on his generals for the fire technology program. Our daughter, Isabella, is a sophomore in high school. She is still deciding on whether or not she will be taking PSEO classes in the next 2 years. She is thinking of going into the radiologic technology program at Lake Superior College, but is also debating on going to school out of state. One of the deciding factors for her will be the overall cost of her future education. Both Matt and I have gone to college previously in the mid to late 1990s, and we were able to attend without going in debt. Matt was able to get a certificate in welding, but because of health limitations, he had to go find another job and go back to school. This time around, however, once we are finished with our respective programs, combined, we will owe approximately $50,000 in school loans. When I first decided to go to college, I hoped to get a good job with good pay and benefits in order to support my children. Now the intent is still to get a good job with good pay and benefits, but since my children are older, I will not be able to support them financially as they pursue their educational goals in the future. Hopefully, if I'm able to obtain my AAS degree and get a good enough job, I may be able to help my future grandchildren in their educational goals. Also, by going back to college and finishing my degree, I am hoping to show my children the importance of higher education and how securing that degree will benefit them in the long run. Living in northern Minnesota, I have the option of transferring to schools inside Minnesota or Wisconsin to pursue my 4-year degree. Because of an articulation agreement between Lake Superior College and the University of Wisconsin in Superior, it makes more sense for me to transfer to UWS and possibly look for employment in Wisconsin in the future. If the Minsky system continues to see massive budget reductions, and if I have to see my tuition continue to increase, it may make more sense for my husband and I to pursue education opportunities and or work in Wisconsin in the future. In conclusion, I'm asking you today to remember all the parents out there who are trying to be a part of the solution to our lagging economy. We are the moms and dads that are going back to get the education and skills of tomorrow's workforce, not only to provide for our children, but also to be a positive example of what a little hard work and quality education can do for our state. Please keep higher education and an affordable option for all of us and our future students of tomorrow. Thank you for your time.
Any questions of Ms. Schultz? Thank you very much. Next.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Catherine Fenwald. I'm a student at Inver Hills Community College. I hope to graduate with my Associate of Arts degree next fall and transfer to a 4-year institution. I plan on majoring in political science and wish to attend law school. My family is part of the middle class, and because of that income, I do not qualify for financial aid. My parents are both hardworking people and do not have the resources to easily pay for my school. Not only are they providing resources for me to attend school, but they have also supported my brother in the past. She attended Dakota County Technical College in the past and is looking to return to school in the future to pursue a new career path. My father is an over-the-road truck driver, and his income is greatly affected by the economy. Lately, he's only been able to come home once a month or less, and is clearly working much harder to make ends meet. My mother is also employed full-time and works hard to ensure a decent quality of life for my family. This semester, I've cut back to attending only part-time because of how difficult it has become to pay for tuition and books. I currently work a third-shift security job on the weekends, and I'm looking at taking out significant loans in the future to finance my education because my parents are unable to help as much as they have in the past. In this economy, it's difficult to find another job, and I worry about my future should I not be able to continue with school. Last month, I had to break my lease and move back home to save money, and I'm very concerned about the amount of debt I'll be forced to take in the future in order to continue my educational career. However, a paramount concern for me is not just the amount of debt that I will incur in the future, but the financial strain that I am placing on my parents. I will forever be indebted to them for their sacrifice and do not want to place any further burden on them, nor see higher education become unattainable for hardworking families in Minnesota. If tuition continues to increase, and even if it doesn't, I may not be able to continue my education. I fear that if I stop attending now, given the length of my desired program, I may never reach the ultimate goal I had hoped to when I started. If I can make it to the end, it will not only benefit me, but it will also benefit the state as a whole. Please make affordable higher education a priority now and into the future.
Thank you, Catherine. Any questions of Ms. Fennewald? I guess I've got one. So, are you a sophomore now?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am.
And what kind of debt have you incurred, or have you not incurred any so far?
I currently have $8,000 in personal debt, and my parents will not be able to finance me beyond my associate's degree and may not even be able to help me finish that without me taking out further student loans.
And you managed to accrue that in 2 years, or have you been there longer?
I've attended off and on since the summer of 2003. I've taken semesters off before to work. But I know that if I continue to do that, I'm not going to graduate before I'm 30. So
$8,000. Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Travis Johnson, and I'm a student at Lake Superior College in Duluth. I'm pursuing a degree in business administration with a social science background. My wife, Erica, is also a full-time student at the University of Minnesota Duluth, where she is studying post-secondary education. To offset our educational costs, I work a full-time job and a part-time job, totaling approximately 55 hours a week. My wife also works a full-time job as well, which will help us pay for the education we both are pursuing in order to better position us as teachers. Because of the intensity of her degree, she receives most of her education in the traditional on-ground in-class learning style. I, on the other hand, must receive all my education online in order to also handle my hours of employment. To do so, I have utilized multiple education institutions within the MinQ system to meet my degree requirements. These online courses have been a wonderful asset to me. However, I worry how significant budget cuts to MinQ will affect the ability of the system to offer these classes in the future, as well as maintain the traditional quality educational path that Minnesota is able to receive. Though my wife and I receive federal and state financial aid, we are still heavily burdened with the cost of our education. We are currently indebted approximately $20,000 in student loans, with the prospect of that number doubling by the time we finish our degree. With these kinds of debt loads, it will be difficult for us to fully engage in our communities and to become active participants in the state's economy. The dream of buying our first home looks less and less likely each day. As I consider educational opportunities for the future, it's becoming clear that the best option for me is to continue an entirely online education through Princeton University. This option will allow me to stay employed full-time, and while still racking up significant debt, help support the educational goals of both my wife and me. My wife and I both receive financial aid, work full-time hours, and still struggle to make ends meet. The public higher education in Minnesota faces another round of significant budget cuts. I'm scared to see what that may mean for my wife and me, but also the long-term impact that these tuition increases and cuts will have on the educational opportunities of our children. I hope that we will be in a position to help our children pay for college, but at this rate, that will be very difficult for us as we try to pay off our own debt. In our day and age, we are seeing the cost of higher education skyrocket, while the financial aid available for education is remaining stagnant. We are seeking uncertain futures as the job market dwindles, and we are working so hard that 24 hours a day is starting to feel like 12, but we also must strive to be as studious as possible. The education that we attain in the present is setting us up to be the next great leaders of this amazing country. However, if we can't comfortably achieve these goals now, then I know it will only get worse for our future generations. Mr. Chair and Member, thanks for the opportunity to speak today.
Question for Mr. Johnson. Just one, where did you say you were going to continue your career in?
Mr. Chair, Franklin University.
Where's Franklin University?
Mr. Chair, it's a private institution out of Illinois. Speaking in Vienna.
Like Capella or Phoenix, something like Capella or Phoenix.
Is it an online?
Online university program.
Yes, Mr. Chair. It's an online university program that I can hear and Mercury taught as a consortium.
All righty. Well, thank you, students, very much. Do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to invite Vice President Sherry Bowser to rise and close the
night. Okay. Welcome back. Good taste in closing, too.
I agree.
Yes. He called me this morning, member.
Good afternoon, Chair Riccavina and members of this committee. For the record, I am Terry Bowser, the Vice President of the Minnesota State College Student Association. As you have just heard it in the testimony from my friends, students across the state are facing debt loads and challenges every day on how to pay for college. Non-traditional students, first-generation students, and traditional age students all face these roadblocks and worries about the impact increasing debt loads will have on the ability to become full and active participants in their communities, as well as their fears regarding the continued access to higher education. My road to college has been much different from those that you have already heard today, but the overall goal remains the same. From following my graduation from Minneapolis Roosevelt High School in 1977, I enlisted into the United States Air Force because even with the scholarship looming from Mankato, I knew deep in my heart I was not ready for college. After basic training, I spent 4 years stationed in Tampa, Florida, where I inspected, repaired, and maintained the weapon systems on the F-16 Fighting Falcon and the F-4 Fighting Phantom Jet. Through this work, I was able to gain great experiences and technical knowledge, but I failed to take advantage of an Air Force educational program called VEET. This program would have contributed significant financial resources to my education. I thought I was not ready for college. Actually, college frightened me. I reckon my fears of the transition from high school to college resonated in my head. Following my receiving an honorable discharge after 10 years in the Air Force, I moved to North Carolina and was employed by the Postal Service for 14 years. Today, I'm back in Minnesota and a student at Century College, and I am looking for a new career path in my life. Century College has provided me the chance to develop my leadership skills as well as work towards learning a new skill. Students are very aware that the upcoming legislative session will require tough budget decisions. The setting of priorities that will help balance the state budget and move the state into a prosperous future. As students who make up Minnesota's current and future workforce, we ask that support for public higher education be a priority for you this session. Together, we can ensure Minnesota is able to compete in the ever-changing economy by ensuring an affordable and accessible public higher educational system that will allow every Minnesotan to get the education they need, every Minnesota business to fill its changing workforce needs, and the state's economy will grow into the future. Chair Riccavina, members of this committee, thank you for taking the time to hear from us students today. And all of you and all of us would be glad to stand for questions at this time.
Any further questions of the students? I guess I have one. Governor Bowser, you heard the question asked earlier. You've got a life experience. You've been a veteran.
Yes, sir, Chair.
You've been a public employee, and now you're back as a student. What would you do to balance this budget? Maybe make cuts to other places or raise some revenue somewhere. Because you're almost as old as me. Not
well, sure. Chair Riccavina, what I would do, well, right now, personally, sir, nothing's off the table. Everything would have to be looked at to make a good decision and an effective decision for all Minnesotans. If it means whatever it has to do to bring the budget in balance, let's look at everything and then decipher through what's effective for the for the state or not.
That's a good answer. That's a, you could run for office. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Terry for all the work you've done at Century College, especially with your work with the veterans on the campus.
Chair Rizzavina, Representative, thank you, McFarland.
Okay, thank you. All of you, and we will keep your words in mind, and I know what you're going through as far as the debt, and I'm nervous for all of you, really. So thank you for your input.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Why don't we have the IFO and Mr. Mulcahy come up together. You guys can get along for a few minutes, can't you? Okay. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Henry, Ms. Phillips. You can identify yourselves, and all three of you might as well get up there. And then we'll get going.
Just quickly, are we really pressed for time? If we are, what I would do is I would defer to Cindy Phillips.
We'll have Ms. Phillips go first.
Okay.
Welcome, Ms. Phillips, to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Rizzavina and members of the committee, my name is Cindy Phillips, and I'm a professor in the School of Business at Minnesota State University, Moorhead. I'm also currently serving as the Faculty Association President at Moorhead, a position that unfortunately puts me right in the center of the budget crisis that has hit our university. Even before the current budget shortfall, Moorhead had faced funding challenges. Our appropriation from the state had not grown over the past 4 years, while our expenses certainly have. We entered this fiscal year with a university budget of approximately $65 million. We also had a brand new president who looked at the economic situation around us and began tightening the budget belt immediately. We began a hiring freeze, and we cut or put on hold most operating fund budgets. Then came the December governor's unallotment. In December, actually it was on the day of graduation at our school, we learned that Moorhead's share was going to be $892,000 to be cut, as were they all, from this year's budget. Of course, that left only 6 months to do it, with students already registered for spring semester. Tuition rates, course offerings, faculty and staff contracts were already set. We had a small reserve, but Minshew directed us not to use it because of the likely further rescissions yet to come this spring. Our freeze on new hires extended to the most basic replacements, and holds on operating funds became cut. Searches for at least 10 faculty are not happening, probably more because departments have ceased even asking for the positions. We have already identified in excess of 22 positions that will not be filled for next year. Two positions in nursing will not be filled. And it certainly isn't just faculty. The frozen or cut positions extend across campus to all kinds of vital positions. We have four general maintenance worker positions we're not filling, and we have two additional general maintenance workers who are on sick leave, and we can't afford to replace them while they're gone. In all, that puts us down nearly 25% of the staff who clean our buildings and at this time of year shovel the sidewalks and keep the parking lots clear. These are folks who voluntarily sleep over at the university when there's a blizzard in prospect. And they're there so that as soon as they can start clearing our campus so the rest of us can come to work. I share this information about the cuts we're already enduring with you not to complain, only to illustrate that we are already well into the process of cutting on our campus. We may be a bit ahead of some of the other campuses because of the early action of our new president last fall. All right, you may remember that I said our budget coming into this year was just under $65 million, $64.8. The budget number we're working off of for next year, the budget we're trying to make, is $55.6. That's a cut of $9.2 million, or 14.2%. And those numbers were developed when we were looking at a state appropriation cut of only 8.2%. The big variable for us is how much of the cuts that come to Minsku get passed on to us. Unfortunately, when Minsku made cuts to resolve the $20 million in unallotments in December, they did not take a proportionate hit in the central office. They passed most of the unallotment along to the campuses. Almost all of the small hits they did take in the central office was made up of interest earned off of bond fund proceeds. In other words, it wasn't a real cut to any operations or positions. If you look at the governor's budget document for Minsku, they list the core mission of Minsku as teaching and learning, exactly what it should be. But if you look at page 5 of the document, and I believe it's been made available to you, has it been distributed?
Yeah.
If you look at that pie chart, 40% is spent on instruction. We think it's time to look at those priorities and make adjustments, particularly to the amounts going into and staying at the central office. My campus is engaged in a total review of all programs and services. In fact, our student rep was talking about that. Where did she go? Student rep was talking about some of that process earlier. This review will help us to determine where cuts should be directed. This means that we expect to see job layoffs. Think of it. For every $1 million, we would need to cut. At least a dozen new faculty will be cut. Faculty we recruited because they were the best, and who were drawn to Minnesota because of our reputation as an education state. And if $1 million means a dozen faculty, that translates into 96 sections of classes that are not offered. Hundreds of students who can't get into classes they need, whose graduation might even be delayed, at a cost to them, more of those loans building up, their families, and to the state. And remember, we're not just looking at $1 million in cuts at Moorhead, we're looking at 9. If you'll indulge me, I'd like to tell you why I'm really here. I was raised by a widowed mother who worked as a waitress to support us. I was raised figuratively and literally on the wrong side of the track. The first in my family to go to college, not because we had money, but because we had inexpensive state universities. Tuition was low, interest rates were low, leaving me with a very modest debt burden when I graduated. That allowed me the vision of graduate school and then law school, the ability to imagine and then to make real a college education, a transformative experience in my life. the stories you've heard from the students today are not unusual. You could go into any classroom on our campus and hear the same story again and again. It's very difficult for me to watch this change in the availability of the transformative power of higher education. The students I see at MSU Moorhead come to us for that same transformation that I had. They come from low-income families, first-generation college students, and new Americans, all seeking to better themselves and their families and the country. I'm here today to plead with you not to inflict these kinds of cuts on higher education. If you need to raise revenue to balance the budget, we are taxpayers and we understand. We all have to pull together and share the pain to solve this crisis. We know that you're going to have to make cuts. We would ask, however, that when you make those cuts, you protect our core functions, the teaching and the learning. And that occurs on the campuses. I would add that what I told you about what we are doing on our campus is illustrative of what can be done on all of the campuses. That is, we know best where to make the cuts. We know best if cuts must be made. We know best how to do that without impacting on the students we serve. We face these difficult times, which are not of any of our making. The faculty are willing to share the pain and to make sacrifices, but we believe that that needs to be fair. Fair to faculty, but most of all fair to our students. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Mr. Henry, if you could be quick, and then Mr. Mulcahy to wrap up.
I have some brief remarks, which I'll truncate rapidly. For the record, my name is Rod Henry, from Michigan State University, where I teach in the marketing and the business administration department, marketing and statistics. I'd like to take credit for being Cody Nelson's voice coach, but as you can tell, that wasn't the case. I have another one of my alums here in the audience as well, Justin Klander. I'm also president of the Interfaculty Organization, and I've been doing that for about 6 months out of the classroom. I can say that being president of a faculty union at this time is less stressful than teaching students in the online and classroom situations I was doing last year. I'm going to cut a number of my remarks and get to the issue that's already been raised about online education. The governor made a proposal that 25% of the MSU courses would be delivered online. Now, I am not a Luddite or a stranger to distance education and using technology. I've gone to such exotic places as Bagley, Buell, International Falls, Grand Rapids, Park Rapids, and I've done it through the mail, I've done it through telephone, I've done it for the last 5 years online, over 50 class sessions, well over 500 students. What I'll tell you is that online is not for everybody. There are some students who it works very well for. I've had students in Kosovo, I've had students in Iraq, I've had students in Colorado and other places. Normally, a student who has completed their degree and is adding on a major, someone adding a minor, someone who needs a few courses to graduate and is place-bound, those students, it works well. However, just like audio, just like TV, just like all the other technologies I talked about, it's not for everyone. Lastly, with online, if there can be problems with online banking, identity theft, other issues, I think we should be able to imagine that can also happen for online. What I'm saying is, let's let demand drive online, let's let the experience of faculty drive online, rather than have some pronouncement come down from on high, as used to happen in the old centrally controlled European economy. Last, again, I'm cutting my remarks. I want to have give Greg an opportunity to speak. As the IFO president, we understand that this state and our nation face the toughest budget situation in decades. Unfortunately for us, the demand for our services normally increases during economic bad times. I saw that when I first came to northern Minnesota, when they were closing different operations on the range. We had a wave of students come in from that. Every time there's an economic downturn, we have more students. We have to cut while our demand is increasing. I want to assure you, Chairman Rukumita, members of the committee, that the IFO is doing its part on the local and statewide level to address these fiscal problems in a timely manner. Time is of the essence because of the lag times, the lead times that we have in hiring and in layoffs in higher education. We want the universities, we want the state system to have as clear a financial picture as possible, as soon as possible, so that they can plan for the coming biennium and beyond. We are exploring creative solutions to this financial emergency, and we hope that the legislature will look to using all available sources of revenue and doing the type of line-by-line analysis that you are talking about to maintain our service to the citizens of the state. Thank you, and I'll take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll wait for him, and we'll have Mr. Mulcahy, but I just do want to say that both we appreciate your input, and we look forward to your input, too, if you have ways to propose cuts that may need to be made. Mr. Mulcahy, pleasure to see you.
For the record, thank you, Chair Rukavina. For the record, I'm Greg Mulcahy. I'm the president of the Minnesota State College faculty. It's the union of the community and technical college faculty. And I would particularly like to greet Representative Poppy, although she has left, and Representative Reinert, both of whom teach in our institutions. I want to talk a little bit about Minsku in particular in the context of this budget proposal, and then I'll talk more generally about the budget proposal. Basically, we've got a simple message that we want to send out to everybody who will listen to us, and that's that when a system's been cut as much as the system has, and it continues to have deep cuts, it's got to focus on what's essential. And what's essential to us is students learning and teachers teaching. And everything else, Minsku has been very, very good over the years with fairly constrained resources of trying to answer every constituent's need. But there's a time when if you got to choose between a center of excellence or some of the coordination they do of various projects, and a teacher in the classroom or a teacher online, our choice is always going to be for that teacher online with the students. And we think there's some historical basis for the way Minsku does its business, in the sense that Minsku was an artificial or politically created system. And because of that, it's been in existence 14 or 15 years, it's kind of layered the three systems on top of each other with a superstructure over that. And they've never really been able to take a strategic look at how can we do this best. And I think that I'll give you just one quick example here. I'm not proposing an automatic revolution in the system, but I think if there were a time they could take a look at, say, this question, 75% of their expenses go to personnel. Higher ed is a labor-intensive business. Why don't they collect that money centrally, pay it out, take the other 25% and distribute it to the colleges and universities according to some rational formula? What we have now is rich institutions and poor institutions. There's no real way to transfer money from a rich institution to a poor institution. And a lot of this comes down to a fundamental question that I don't think the system's ever answered. Is it a confederation or is it a system? Now, I want to be cautious here because either answer has good and bad for all the constituents in this system. But I think it's something they're going to be forced to deal with sooner or later. I also want to react quickly to some of the comments that I've heard on public radio and that I understand you've heard. There's a tendency when things get tight in education to kind of demonize faculty, and particularly to demonize faculty contracts. And you're going to hear things like we're handcuffed by the faculty contracts, as though these contracts were ordered by Thor and imposed upon the system, not bargained over a series of years. I don't think demonizing faculty or demonizing their contracts is going to do anything to help the state out of the problem it's in. I could sit here and demonize people I like to demonize, but I'll save that for home because I don't think it'll do any good.
I do it all the time.
You don't say. I would say about online quickly, a lot of the online in the system was developed by two-year faculty who were early adopters. We're not opposed to online. We see online as having an appropriate place, but that's usually a place for a very self-directed student who sees an immediate kind of a payoff from the online experience. Finally, I would make two final points. I would like to acknowledge Dr. Eugenia Paulus of North Hennepin Community College, who was picked by the Carnegie Foundation as the Community College Professor of the Year this year. It's a nationwide award, and I was sorry to hear the Office of the Chancellor didn't acknowledge her, but since I've got a microphone, I'm going to do that. Finally, there's no panacea. I think we're going to have to raise some revenue. I think we're going to have to suffer some cuts. But the sad fact is, in higher ed and in public education generally, for the past 30 years, people have been trying to say, you can pay for less and get more. And again, even with the Edison Project and everything else, nobody's been able to duplicate the result. You get what you pay for, and unfortunately, that's kind of the world we're in. Thank you very much.
Questions of all of any or all of the witnesses. Representative Murphy.
I just have one quick question about the governor's proposal on online learning, that every student before they get to college should have had at least one great online experience. Is that possible?
Anybody?
I'll take a shot since I'm in the 2 years and I'm a little closer to K-12. I think you're talking about a considerable commitment of infrastructure, and particularly when you talk about some of the small rural districts. Remember, we've got K-12 teachers who don't get health insurance in the state. So, it's easy to look at online as a cure-all, but it's like all technology. It's got a three-year lifespan, you've got to keep replacing it, and it's an ongoing investment.
Representative Murphy, I have asked Minsky and I think the university both for an estimate on what they're spending on technology. And it's not cheap, and you all know that. I mean, even I got an iPhone, for God's sake.
And everybody doesn't have broadband.
That's right. I still have dial-up. I love it. Representative Bryant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be Ms. Phillips' question, I don't know, but you referred us to this chart.
Right.
And what I'm really interested in is you emphasized the decreasing proportion of instruction, or the need to increase the proportion of instruction.
Right.
And at the same time, you talked about the issues around the central office budget.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is this chart doesn't help me figure that out. And what I'd really like to do is see every campus and see this kind of chart, and then see central office and see that kind of chart.
Well, Representative Bryant.
Well, I know we might have that.
That's what we're going to be asking,
yeah,
because I have no idea what the chart means, and my fiscal analyst and my committee administrator, who's been involved in education all year for longer than I've been around, probably don't know what is in academic support or institutional support or auxiliary enterprises and what's hidden where.
Well,
so we're going
to... Well, and wherever we get the information, I think we need to enlighten that issue with better data, even looking at central offices expenditures. Understand how they might assign those out to the campuses and say, are they saving campuses from some of these expenditures? We need to understand
that.
That, so that's part of, yes, all right, that. But we'll look
Chair.
At that. All right.
Yep. Thank you, Sabina, if I may. We brought this because it was in the governor's budget and indicates, even in their detail, only 40% being attributed to instructional. I do not have exactly the same, but I do have a pie chart from my university, and the best I can do is refer you to academic affairs, and that is 72.8% of our budget. So this data certainly is available.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers at the table. Can you give me an idea, besides reductions in staff, what other discussions are occurring at your campuses as far as reductions that will be made? What creative ideas have come out? And if you can do that very briefly, I'd appreciate. Just give the committee some idea of the actual impact that you're talking about at the campuses.
Sure. We have committees in place until we all think we're spending our lives in committees, which must be a feeling that's familiar to some of you. But we're working on both the revenue and expenditure side. On the expenditure side, we're certainly looking at things like energy efficiency, and we've got task force going, and we're trying to, as much as we can, and the kinds of buildings that we have, promote greater energy efficiency and cost savings in that way. We certainly turned the temperature down in the building. We're looking at consolidating all of the summer school classes in one or two buildings. It turns out that it costs us more to cool buildings in the summer than it does on a daily basis than to keep them in the winter. So we're looking at scheduling activities that way. As you've seen, we've reduced, or as I mentioned, we've reduced the number of folks already doing many projects. We're looking basically at every way we can to increase revenue, and we're certainly we've looked at is there any outsourcing that would be viable, and I think we've basically reached the conclusion that there isn't anything we could outsource and maintain the service level, so that we've explored it, but it doesn't seem to work. Work for us. The students are considering whether or not they might agree to banding of tuition, which would give us a little steadier level of revenue, but also would encourage students to be done sooner. If you can get the same number of credits for X dollars, you know, for X dollars you can get either 14 credits or 18 credits. The incentive then is to...
You're aware that the university did that 2 years ago when you were on a conference committee, and it's showing some success.
And the prioritization process that we're in is really looking to what are our strong programs and what are the programs that don't have the resources, and we expect that before school is out this spring, we will have some significant cuts or perhaps elimination of some programs because there just isn't any other way we can do it.
Representative Anderson, do you want to go? Okay, I'm sorry we went over committee, but these people came, two of them came a long way, so, and the students came a long way. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
It's not going to be, and members, if, when you take in your, my committee administrator didn't want you to take your budget books, but I said, no, they're big kids. They can take them. But try to bring them back then with you. You can leave them if you want. In fact, yeah, if you don't want it, that's fine. Leave them. And if you want specific parts of it, we'll copy it for you or whatever. Meeting adjourned.